Are you looking to connect with a diverse audience of developers? Look no further. You can partner with us here at the Code Newbie Podcast, and we'll help get your message out to our incredible listeners in an ad just like this one, led by me, your host. Contact us by emailing sponsors@codenewbie.org. Welcome to the Code Newbie Podcast, where we talk to people on their coding journey in hopes of helping you on yours. I'm your host, Saran, and before we kick off the show, I want to tell you about our incredible sponsors. Today on the show, I'm so excited to have our very own and our very first Code Newbie apprentice on the show, Sharon Siegel. Sharon, you want to say hi?
Hi, everyone.
So if you don't know about our apprenticeship program, we put out applications back in December. It was open for only 10 days, and we had 322 applicants from all over the world. And of those 322, I chose 42 to do a 30-minute interview with, and then I chose 12 to do a pairing session with, which was an hour. And then of that 12, I chose Sharon. So Sharon, you are very special.
Aw, thank you. I feel very special.
So I'm really excited to have you on because a couple of people have actually said, hey, what happened to that apprentice? We would love to hear her story and what she's up to and what she's learning. So now they get to find out about that. But they also get to hear a little bit about your backstory. So I'm going to say that I was really excited. And one of the reasons why I chose you, besides you being a great developer and knowing your stuff, is the fact that you have done some online stuff. You're very involved in the community and you're very, very invested in all the things that you do relating to code and giving back to people who are also learning. So I would love to hear a little bit about your origin story. How did you get involved in code?
So my story is actually pretty unique compared to a lot of other people that I've heard on the podcast. It seems like most people kind of find coding themselves. And I was actually, I had a friend who was a programmer. And for a while, he would try to get me to code with him and do different things. And so over a few years, like once or twice, I would, my first language was Python, and I would try and do an Euler problem. Euler problems, there's a site and they're mostly math problems and you use programming to solve them. And so I had tried that and I'd do it for like a few hours. And then I would realize that, well, I would feel like I wasn't really improving. And I would feel like I wasn't really learning. And so I would pick things up really quickly. And this was very different for me because I wasn't picking it up very quickly. And so I thought, well, I'm not cut out for this. I can't be a programmer. And so in 2014, my friend saw that I was really, really bored with my job. And so he suggested that I try programming for 1 hour a day for a month and see how I feel about it and see if I see any progression. And he was like, I promise you will see improvement, because that was my biggest thing from stopping me from coding, because I did like the coding part. I just didn't like not improving. And so I did that. And then after about a week, I overcame this major mind block. And I was like, I love this. This is amazing. I did my first real happy dance. And so
not those fake happy dances.
No, this was a real all-out happy dance with like a woohoo.
Nice.
So after that, I found Girl Develop It. And I found PyLadies and some other organizations. I was living out in Seattle at the time. So it was big, big tech place. And so, you know, I talked to other women who were doing this and they were so encouraging. And I think if I had gone into programming earlier, I might not have stuck with it. But because there were all these encouraging people and all these women who were like, yeah, I'm doing this as a living, I was so excited. And so I decided to quit my job and learn programming and do that. And so that's where I came from.
That is so, so interesting. And I'm so happy. I'm happy that's your origin story. And I'm happy that you got to share that with so many folks, because people, I think because I started Code Newbie, people assume that I want everyone to be a coder. And that's not the mission. The mission is, if you find code interesting, you shouldn't not do it because it makes you feel stupid or because you're struggling or because it's too hard. You should not do it because you just don't want to do it. And that's a perfectly legitimate reason to not do anything, right? If you don't want it to be your career, that's fine. But it made me really sad because I knew that it was just so challenging. And when you do it on your own, you're in a state of failure and you don't see that progression that you want to see. And it makes me so sad to know that if you just stick it out just a little bit longer, it could really be an amazing experience. But it's just too discouraging. So I'm really glad you had that friend who said, give it a month, 1 hour each day, and really push through. That's awesome.
I'm so glad I had him too, because it changed my life.
So once you decided, okay, this is for me and this is great and I can make progress, what did you do to really buckle down and focus on learning in the hopes of getting a developer job?
So I had originally tried learning on my own. But it was just, there's so many resources out there. Sometimes it's hard to do on your own. And I kind of needed more structure than that. So I ended up taking a Skillcrush course. I took their Ruby on Rails developer blueprint. So that really helped me. And then I became friends with my instructor. And so she really helped me kind of get an aim, you know, and kind of focus. And then after that, I went through the Firehose Project, which is an online boot camp. It's 15 weeks, 12 or 15 weeks. And I went through that, and that put me on my way to becoming a developer.
So it's interesting that there's this nice mix of resources, and I've seen this very consistently throughout the community, where it's not a boot camp that does it. It's not a program that does it. It's really a nice combination of that. So it sounds like you leveraged the community with PyLadies and Girl Develop It, then you did two online programs. How did you navigate the different resources that you could have used and pick the ones that you did?
I picked the ones that gave me more structure, because that's just how I am. When I'm learning this stuff on my own, it's a lot easier when I have a goal. Like, I need motivations. So I need something that's like, you know, Skillcrush had a thing where if you complete an assignment, you know, that gets marked off, you know, and you read a lesson, that gets marked off. And so, you know, that helps me a lot, where it's like, okay, well, today I have this lesson to complete. And so seeing all those green, you know, green marks, it's like, okay, yes, I accomplished this. And the same idea with the Firehose Project was, there's kind of a timeline. And so following that just made it a lot easier for me, instead of saying, you know, I'm going to read this much, or I'm going to complete this much on a project. Because at that time, I didn't know how long things would take. So if I said I was going to work on this one thing and it ended up taking 2 days, then that was kind of discouraging for me. So if I had something like a curriculum that was like, okay, well, this should take you this long, you know, that made it much easier for me and much more motivating for me.
Yes, those checklists are very, very helpful.
Oh my gosh, yes. Mm-hmm.
So having used all these different resources, I know that one of the most popular questions we get is, where do you start? There's so many different ways, there's so many different tools, so many different products out there for people who are learning to code, that it can be very overwhelming and just really tough to figure out where to start, what to do next. Do you have any advice for folks who might be overwhelmed with all the different options they have on how they can find something that's a good fit for them?
Oh gosh. Yeah, I mean, I still have that problem right now. Fear of missing out with learning resources. Mm-hmm. There's just so many of them, and I want to do all of them. I think kind of a good idea might be to try a little bit of different things and see what works for you and what doesn't work for you. You know, I tried Codecademy for a little while, and that was good for getting syntax, you know, but then you kind of need to move beyond that. And that's also kind of a motivating thing, because you also get like check marks for completing stuff. So Codecademy might be a good place to just try out different languages and see, you know, if you lean towards one direction or the other. And just do a little bit, you know, you don't have to learn the whole language to know whether you like it or not. Just try a little bit of different things, see what appeals to you, what what processes work for you, and just go from there.
So you've done two online programs. And when I did my boot camp, really the biggest thing I got from it was the sense of community that I built from having people physically in the same space, you know, struggling with me and high-fiving and cheering with me and being able to create those really strong connections. How do you feel that the emotional support system, how do you feel that that works when the learning is done online?
I think, like, you don't have that constant people around you, you know, working next to each other doing stuff. But both Scale Crush and the Firehose Project had communities. Scale Crush had, you know, we had a chat and we would talk with our fellow students. And then the Firehose Project, we had like a Slack channel. And so we would all communicate there. The instructors for both programs were super, super friendly, super available. They were always happy to answer questions and or, you know, connect you with other students. But it was really good to share our experiences with other students and know, because programming is really hard, so you're going to struggle. And so having other students to talk to about your struggles or to ask questions to, you know, Skill Crush had a forum as well. And so you could post questions under a homework post and other students might answer it or the instructor would answer it. And then other students would go, oh, yeah, I had that same problem. I'm so glad that, you know, there's an answer to this. And so it was really helpful to know that there were other people out there like me.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's really what it's about, not feeling alone when you're going down this very difficult coding journey. So I'm glad that you were able to get that in an online setting.
Yeah, the one problem that I think is that you have to reach out more.
Yeah, it has to come from you.
Yeah, exactly. You have to you have to say something. But I think that the fact that you can see other people, you know, running into those same problems, I think that's really helpful. And it helps you to be able to speak up and say, hey.
Yeah, definitely. So tell me about what role the community has played, because between Girl Development and I think you're doing Rails Bridge and a couple other things that you mentioned, how has being not just a member of the community, but playing an active role in developing it and building it, how has that played into your coding journey and specifically learning to code?
I think being a part of the community, both as a member and as an organizer, it's really helped my confidence. It's really opened me up to seeing that programming is a process and it's a hard, hard process. And so I get to meet so many people who are going through or who have gone through the same things that I've gone through or I'm going through. And it's so good to see that it's not just me, you know, and it's good for me to see I can help other people by telling them about my journey. And so it feels so good to be a part of that community, both as a member and an organizer.
So let's talk a little bit about the apprenticeship. What was it like for you as an applicant to, one, decide to apply, and then, two, to actually go through the application process? You can be honest. I won't be upset.
Oh, I'm going to unleash all of the horrible things right now. So it was actually a really good process. I almost didn't apply. I was like, oh, well, there's going to be so many other people who are so much better than me. You know, I'm not going to make it. So why am I even going to bother applying? And so I had a couple really good friends who were like, this would be perfect for you. You need to apply. You have to apply. And so I was like, all right, well, it's not going to take too much of my time to apply. So I'll just do it. It can't hurt, you know. And so I filled out the application and it was, you know, it was a really easy application to fill out. You just kind of have to share your passion and your dreams and, you know, what you want to get out of it. And then, you know, you send it off and then you wait to hear back. And the application process itself, it started off with an interview. It was like a 20-minute interview with Saran. And I got asked questions that I didn't know all the answers to. And so after the first interview, I walked away and I went back to my friends and I was like, well, I didn't get it. I didn't know all the answers. you know, I guess, oh well. And so then I got a message from Saran inviting me to do a code along. And I was like, okay, that's weird, but sure, I'll do it. And we did it. And it was such a fun experience. And I mean, I love pair programming. It's so much fun to be able to talk out your thoughts and to have feedback and to make jokes and have someone actually laugh at them rather than just laughing on my own. And so it was a really, really great experience, but I didn't know all the answers again. You know, there were some things that I got stuck on either because I was nervous or maybe I just, you know, I didn't process it. And so I walked away again and I was like, well, there's definitely people who did better than I did. So I guess I didn't get it. And then I got an email from Saran and I was offered the position and I was just, I was shocked. I was really, really shocked. So I definitely learned a big lesson through that whole process. And that was, it's okay to not know the answer. And so that was probably the biggest thing I learned from that whole thing. And that's really helped me in applying to jobs and being a developer too, and asking questions and being confident in asking someone questions, because I know that I don't have to have all the answers. I have to try, and I have to try to find the answers, but I don't have to know them.
Yes, and that's honestly one of my favorite things about working with you, because you'll come to me and you'll say, you know, I got stuck on this problem, and I'll say, okay, did you try this? Yep, I tried that. Did you look at this? Yep, I looked at that. Did you search it? Yes. And literally all the things that, well, most of the things that, you know, I would have done, you had already been through. And to me, that says a lot, that you were very thorough and very thoughtful and very creative in your problem solving. And it wasn't, oh, I'm stuck, someone save me. It was, I'm stuck, what are the different ways that I could look at it and get it done? And that's really what the interview process was looking for. You know, it wasn't really about getting all the right answer. You got most of the right answer. I think maybe you got maybe one wrong. But even the one that you didn't get right, the way you thought about it and talked through it and weighed the options, that's what mattered a lot more than actually getting the right answer.
Yeah, and I've learned through the process that that's such a huge part of being a developer, is being able to go through that process.
So I'm sure that people are wondering what types of things you got to do as a Code Newbie apprentice. So why don't you share some of the awesome stuff and some of the painful stuff that we had to go through together in the last few months?
Well, I got to do a lot of cool things that are actually on the site now. One of the coolest things was that we added a meetup events page. So you can see upcoming meetups from all the Code Newbie chapters or meetup groups. And so getting to work with the Meetup API was really cool. And also,
that was funny.
Troubling sometimes.
Yeah.
Meetup API. Tisk, tisk.
You know, so I think I told you my first developer job was entirely working with the Meetup API. And when that was over and I moved on to the next gig, I said to myself, I'm never coming back to this. And that we spent so much time working with that. And to me, it was interesting to go back to it, because I didn't really remember the specific ways that it worked. But having come back to it 2 years later, I felt it was definitely easier to navigate the issues that it had, you know? And it was really interesting to kind of watch you go through the same process I went through in my first time and go, oh, it's okay, we can just do this instead. And there was so much deja vu happening in those pairing sessions. It was really interesting. Yeah.
It kind of seems like muscle memory in a sense. You know, you've done this before, you know, you've done it before. It's been a really long time, but you still have a little bit of it in the back of your mind.
So what else did you do?
Users can be admins now. So they can access the site as an administrator.
And this I'm going to explain, because this is going to sound very normal to people.
That's true.
But this is very revolutionary in our code base. So before, I was the only admin. For a long time, I was the only one doing anything really with the site in terms of updating and content and that kind of thing. And so there was no reason to have user roles, right? When you have users, you have permissions, and some people are users, some people are visitors. There's admin. I think there's also like a super admin, which I think generally is not a great idea, but there's different levels. And so there was no reason to have an admin concept in the code base because I was the only admin. So instead, I just had the environment variable be a password, and then I accessed it that way. And then eventually, a couple other people started helping with the site, and I thought, okay, we need to graduate to actually having an admin role. And that was an awesome experience.
That was a lot of fun, actually. I learned a lot, especially about like altering a code base, because other features that we worked on were just kind of like brand new features. And so they didn't really have a whole lot to do with the rest of the code. So that was my first experience really digging in and changing something over different models and different aspects of the code.
Yeah. And that in of itself. So to me, that is the most terrifying thing is, you know, when you get to start with your very own app and it's, you know, Greenfield, it's really nice because you get to make all the rules, you decide how you want things to be. But when you're going into someone else's house, right, and you kind of have to figure out, okay, well, where is the bathroom exactly? And what do they have those vegan sausages that I like? You know, you kind of have to figure that out. So I'd love to hear what that process was like as you entered the CodeNewbie code base and had to find your way around enough to actually do some coding.
So the first thing we did was we looked at the model and kind of saw what was available and what wasn't available. And one of the things that wasn't available was an admin role. So that was something that we had to add to the model. And then we also had to fix the tests to account for that. And then we looked at the controller, which is where we tell the program what to do with something, with a specific thing. And so we had to allow for admins to sign in and access specific pages, whereas just regular users couldn't access those pages. So then we did some fiddling around and we changed the tests so that everything worked the way that we expected it to work. And then we had our admin feature.
So what was your strategy the first time? So I guess the first time you looked at the code base was during the interview process. What was your strategy in figuring out pretty quickly? I think I gave you an hour to do the exercise in figuring out what was going on, where you needed to go. How did you jump in and get acquainted?
So if I remember correctly, the task was that we wanted to show all of the links from all of the podcasts on one page. So that's easily accessible.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I looked through the code and I saw what different models there were. And so there was a podcast model and then there was a show links model. So I basically looked at all the models to see what was available and what would be most applicable to what I wanted to do. And so I looked into the podcast model and saw what was there. I looked at the migrations, which is basically a way of saying this is the information that's in the podcast model, or this is information that has been added or removed from the podcast model. So I looked at the schema and I looked for the podcast model first because I was pretty sure there had to be some type of podcast model. And then I looked for a show link model or something like that. And so there were both those models. And I looked at what was available in the models and what we could utilize in order to show the show links on one page. And so I just kind of took a look at the models themselves as well to see if there were any methods that we should use. I took a look at the view, which is how the page is laid out. I took a look at the view for the show links. So that way we could kind of use that same direction to show them all on one page. And then so I kind of took all those things together and I used what we call associations because there was some association between the podcasts and the show links. So we used that just to display all of the different show links on one page.
Nice. Did you find that process? Well, how did you find that process? Was it intimidating? Was it difficult? Was it easier than you thought it'd be?
It was all of those, actually. It was very intimidating to have someone sort of looking over my shoulder while I went through this process of not knowing exactly what was going on at first. But it was also really nice to have someone to talk my thoughts out to.
Yes.
Because that's really, really helpful. And then it was harder in the sense that I was very nervous. So I felt like it was harder than it could have been or should have been for me. But it was also easy in the sense that it was so nice to have someone encouraging. And so it made me a little bit less nervous. So it was kind of a bag of emotions.
Yeah. I like what you said about having someone to talk your feelings out loud to, because when I do interviews, when I'm the one being interviewed, that's how I frame it in my mind. I'll say, this person isn't judging you. This person is here to help. And I'll say to them, do you mind if I talk out loud and, you know, have a conversation? And when I do that and I use them as, you know, an audio whiteboard almost, and I could see their reaction and kind of see, and sometimes I'll ask them questions and sometimes they'll even answer the questions. And when I think of it in that way, I find that I get a lot less nervous.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's interesting because I think if someone had a bad reaction, I might get a little bit more nervous, but I've yet to have that. I think people
yes.
are more focused on your process. And so they're happy to answer questions or they're, you know, they're happy to listen to your thoughts. And mm-hmm. that's something that I really, really got out of the apprenticeship was, you know, we would pair program and I would just talk out whatever I was doing or whatever I was thinking. And it was so good to have that ear, you know, and I would get like instant feedback, and that was also really helpful.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally right. Even when I'm the one who's driving in our pairing sessions, I get the same value as well, you know, being able to talk out loud. And it's funny because you get to see my thought process and you get to see me say or hear me say, I guess you're kind of seeing and hearing me say, you know, I'm thinking about this in three different ways. And the first option is this, the second option is this, and I don't really care about the third option that much. And you get to see that process. And I think when I think about the people who go through all the online resources and have the head knowledge, but haven't actually worked on a quote unquote real project yet, that's the one thing that I think is missing, is understanding what the decision-making process is and what the coding process is, right? Because it's not just coding. We have a Trello board and we have obviously our GitHub repo, and we have, you know, the code review process, and we have a flow. And I'm wondering, what did that process look like from your perspective?
It was really good to see someone else have a process and to question things and to think, okay, well, this might be one way of doing it, and this might be another way, and I'm not really sure which is the best way yet. And so it was really, really good to see that and realize, okay, it's not just me that's going through that.
Yep.
So it was a really great experience to see how other people work, because that's definitely something that you miss when you're learning. You don't really see how other people learn or how other people develop. And so I feel like it makes me a better developer now to know that this is the process and this is how people do it. And this is, you know, I'm not just making this up, you know, I'm not just talking to myself for the benefit of talking to myself. So that was really, really helpful.
Was it surprising? Was any part of the process surprising or just different than what you expected?
It was surprising in the sense that when I first went into this, I felt like everyone else knew the answers and I didn't. And so it was good to see someone who is an experienced developer being like, well, I'm not really sure what the answer is. So we'll just try these different things and see, you know, see what ends up feeling right and what, you know, what works best. Yeah, so that was probably the most surprising thing.
So that was also my favorite part when I was the apprentice and I was working with someone who'd been doing it for 10 plus years, I think.
Wow.
And yeah, and we'd pair and he would go very calmly go, I don't really know what to do. And I would just think to myself, yes.
It's not just me.
It was awesome. And I think that when someone else can admit that they don't know how to do something, it in that situation, it gave me permission to then say, well, I was thinking maybe we could do this, or I'm wondering about this. And you did that to me lots of times, which was really helpful in both directing my thought process, but also questioning some of the assumptions that I was making about what we were doing. And so, yeah, I find it very, very comforting when senior people don't know the answer. And yes. A lot of times they don't know the answer. It's great. It's absolutely great.
There's just too many answers out there for you to really know what the best one is at the time.
Yes. Yes, that is absolutely true. So I think most of the apprenticeship was pretty awesome, but we definitely had some rough parts.
Yes.
Would you like to talk about some of those rough parts?
Well, the first rough part that we ran into was, so the first day we were supposed to spend, I don't know, maybe 3 hours doing setting up the environment and everything.
Wasn't that just cute? Wasn't such a cute idea?
It was a very, very cute idea.
It was very cute.
But a week later, we were still setting up the environment. Our 3 hours extended to like 30 hours. And it just seems like that's what programming is. You're going to run into problems. Whenever we had a task, not every time, but there were times when there would be a task and we would estimate it to be, you know, however long. And then, you know, a few days later, which was not, you know, we planned on doing it in like 10 hours or something. And 15 hours later, we're still working on it because we ran into some bug. Like there was one very recently. We were designing some cool new feature for the homepage, which I will not share yet. And we somehow broke a podcast spec. Or I broke a podcast spec. And we were like, oh no, what's going on? So we spent so much time on it. And then later we realized that it was a problem. Somehow the database on my computer had gotten messed up. And so all I had to do was reset the database.
Mm-hmm.
And then it worked.
Which made a lot more sense than the code actually being wrong, because we hadn't touched any part of the podcast model or the specs or anything related to that.
Exactly. Yes, and we just spent so much time being so confused and not knowing what was going on, and then it was just this one simple thing. There were many more problems like that, but...
mm-hmm. Yeah, so when you're in those moments where you're just banging your head against the wall and you're... I think at that point we almost ran out of ideas except the resetting the database one, and when you're in those moments, what helps you get through? What helps you finally bang it one more time and the wall finally caves in?
There are a few different things that I try depending on the circumstances. Sometimes I'll go for a walk, or I'll take a shower, or I'll go to the gym, just kind of step away from the code and just let it sink in. That's something that usually helps a lot of the time. Another thing is just kind of making jokes and being able to laugh about it. And just kind of not taking it that seriously. And sometimes that kind of just lets your mind loosen up a little bit. And then you can think a little bit clearer. At least to me. I don't know if this is true for everybody. But just being able to laugh kind of makes it less dire in a way. I know dire isn't, you know, coding isn't a dire circumstance. But, you know, when you're struggling with something and you're like, oh, I don't know what to do. You just have to laugh. Because if you can't laugh, then it's too serious and it's too important and you get stuck. Yes. And so for me, laughing is a good way to get unstuck.
Yes. Yes. I like that a lot. That's a really good one.
Thanks.
So your apprenticeship is just about over. We have a couple weeks left, hoping to finish up the homepage by then. But you are in the process of looking for your next move. So what are you looking for?
I'm looking for something that involves coding and challenges and constant learning. That's why I got into coding. But I have a background in customer service and healthcare. And so I'm looking for something that will either combine those skills or, you know, pure coding is fine with me. But I'm also happy to use the skills that I already have and maybe kind of do a technical support role where I get to code and learn and do all these different things. I really like being able to dive into different roles. So, you know, coding combined with something else would be fantastic for me.
Yes, and if you are looking to hire a really, really awesome programmer who is super sharp and has such great energy and is a joy to work with, you should definitely reach out to Sharon. So Sharon, how can people reach you?
They can reach me on LinkedIn or email or Twitter. I'm pretty available.
Available all around? Awesome.
Yeah.
So besides coding, you do a bunch of other stuff as an organizer in the community. Tell us about some of the other things that you do.
So I am a chapter leader for the Girl Develop It here in Fort Collins. It's such a great community. I'm so glad. Girl Develop It has been such a huge help to me as far as getting into coding and, you know, keeping going with coding. And so I'm so happy to be able to give back to that same community that helped me and to be able to help others the way it's helped me. And so we have different events. We have different workshops that are affordable. Women and men can both sign up for them, even though it's called Girl Develop It. And I volunteer as a chapter support lead for RailsBridge. So we're trying to help the chapters be a little bit more efficient, kind of create a central place for chapters to go to when they need help or they have questions. And another thing that I do is I work at Skillcrush as a teaching assistant. So I get to help people learn how to code, which is super fantastic. And I love being able to help people. So I love my job there. If you're interested in taking a Skillcrush course, you know, check out Skillcrush. And, you know, we're always happy to help. I love being able to help be a part of other people's journeys. So I definitely love what I do as both a volunteer and as my job. And I also help out with the Firehose project. I help answer student questions regarding their code. And so I get to help them as well. And it makes my day.
So when you are doing these, because most of the community organizing I do with CodeNewbie is virtual, right? It's Twitter chats, it's the podcast, it's even though we have in-person meetup groups, I don't have my group. So I'm kind of doing that vicariously through our really, really awesome team leads. So I'm wondering, what is the experience of learning to code, leveling up your own skills, but then doing these in-person, very hands-on, it sounds like very personal events and programs for people who are also trying to level up and break into the tech industry?
So basically when you're learning something, one of the best ways to learn it is to be able to teach it. And so being able to help teach classes with Girl Develop It or teach students at Skillcrush is a learning process for me. And so I get to think about things in a deeper way. And so I have to learn in order to teach others. And so I can't tell you how much I've learned just teaching like an introduction to programming class with Girl Develop It. It's been and students are such quick learners. It's so good to see them picking things up and enjoying the process. And it feels really good for me to learn and to help teach others at the same exact time. It's amazing. And I love it.
That's awesome. That's really great that you get to combine both things. Do you feel like when you're coding, you are using a different skill set than when you're organizing? Or do you feel like those work together very well?
That is a very good question. I think both skills they're different, but they're also similar and they can play off of each other. As an organizer, you also kind of have to find the thing that works best. And sometimes that's just a process of trial and error or, you know, seeing what works for other people and maybe incorporating different things from different methods that other people use. And in programming, you do a lot of the same thing. You know, you'll probably use Stack Overflow a lot and you might not use an exact answer. You might use different pieces from different articles and see, you know, what works best. And so I think that's part of organizing is just kind of fitting the pieces into place. But you definitely use a lot more people skills when you're organizing things. You know, you have to find venues and you have to, you know, maybe talk to a sponsor. Whereas in programming, you might have less of that, though there is some coordinating with other developers or, you know, pair programming with a more senior developer. So I think these different skills, depending on what you're doing at the time, can be helpful in in both aspects.
So between the stuff that we did in the apprenticeship and the girl develop it and the skill crush Tiang and all that stuff, what has been your proudest moment? What's the one accomplishment that you're just really, really pumped about?
Oh, that's really hard to choose. I'm so proud of all of my accomplishments.
Good for you. Good for you.
Even the little things, like just finding an error, like finding a typo in a piece of code. You know, I just – everything just makes me want to do a happy dance. I really value those happy dances. But I think my proudest moment was the apprenticeship. And because I just – I felt like – I put so many barriers on myself and I kept putting myself down and I kept feeling like, oh, I'm not good enough. I'm not going to get this. And the fact that I got it and that, you know, I went through it and it's just been such a valuable experience. And, you know, I almost lost out on the chance because I thought I wasn't good enough. And there must have been people who were much better than me. So I think that's definitely my biggest accomplishment was going through that whole program and learning all of these cool new things, and feeling like a developer now. I think that's my biggest mm-hmm. success so far.
You are a developer. You're an awesome developer. Yeah.
Thank you.
So let's do some fill in the blanks. Are you ready?
Sure.
Number one, worst advice I've ever received is?
So I haven't really gotten any bad advice. There was...
Wow, that's impressive.
Yes, there was some good advice that kind of maybe had a little loophole in it. when I first started, I was told anyone can be a programmer. And in one sense, that's totally true. Anyone can learn to program. But I think that there are certain personality traits that make people programmers. So you have to enjoy programming, for one. Just because you can program doesn't mean that you're going to enjoy it or succeed at it. Like, you have to be able to persevere and work through problems and research problems. And these are all things that you can totally develop over time. Like, I didn't have, you know, the ability to Google everything in the beginning. You know, it's taken a lot of time and a lot of practice and a lot of asking for help. But you get there, and it's just you have to have the will to get there. You have to enjoy it enough to be able to get through that process. And so I guess that's the worst advice I've ever gotten, but it's still not bad advice.
Mm-hmm. So the worst advice being that you need a certain personality to be a coder?
Yeah. Yeah, I think... I mean, I was made to feel that a monkey can do programming. And because, you know, the person who gave me this advice wanted me to think that I could program, you know, because at the time I felt very dumb and I felt like I couldn't do it. And so this person was trying to make me feel better. And yes, that's totally true. But I think that you really, really have to enjoy programming in order mm-hmm. to really succeed at it. So, and I wasn't told that part.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good explainer, I guess. There's kind of a qualifier to that, right? Yes, everyone can do it, but if you want to do it, you should work on these particular skills. Patience is definitely one of them. You know, as you mentioned, actually enjoying the work is another thing. There have to be certain things in place for you to then be a coder, right? Even when I think back to just I thought I was a great problem solver before I learned to code. And then I said, oh, this is what you mean. You know, being able to break down things in just the smallest, teeniest little pieces to think it through just on such a fine level and then code through it. I mean, that is a skill. And I could be a coder, but I had to kind of learn that skill first as part of the coding journey.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Yeah. Number two, my first coding project was about?
So my first coding project was, a lot of people have said, like, MySpace. And so that was my first coding project. But because everyone else has said that, I'm going to go with the thing that I really, when I first started programming, I built a little RPG where it was just like a text-based adventure game. And so you would like move 3 steps forward and then you would run into a monster and you could use your sword to like hit the monster for so many points. And so it was just a little adventure game like that. And it was a lot of fun to make.
Very nice. Oh, man. Okay. So when people write those choose your own adventure games, do you write the storyline first and then kind of figure out, or do you just kind of do it all at once so you code and story write at the same time?
Mine was super, super basic. So I didn't really have a story. It was more just like movement and hitting things.
That's the core part. Yeah.
Yeah. So I wasn't, my focus was on learning programming at the time. So it was less story and more like, ooh, I can program this to do this thing, you know? Yeah. And so I never went through to the story part, but that's a good idea for my next project.
There you go. Number 3, one thing I wish I knew when I first started to code is?
It's something that I've mentioned a lot in the podcast is it's okay to not know the answer. You know, you want to do your research and you want to try to figure out the answer, but sometimes it's okay to say, I don't know, what do you think? Or what do you suggest? So just because you don't know the answer doesn't mean that you're dumb. It doesn't mean that you're wrong. And it's okay to be wrong is another thing. I wish I knew that because for me, you know, in school, if you get an answer wrong, that's a bad, bad thing. But that's not necessarily the case in programming. You know, sometimes good ideas come out of doing the wrong thing. So I think that's something that I wish someone had told me in the beginning.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that one. So do you have a couple of shout outs for us?
I do. One is a very, very cool community called Juniors Are Awesome. It started by Sarah Regan and Tam. I'm not sure her last name. But it's a really safe place. It's only for junior developers. But if you're a more senior developer, you're definitely welcome to reach out to them. But it's just it's a safe, confidential place to talk about, you know, your job, whether it be frustrations or things that you love or, you know, the process of applying to jobs or get some type of mentorship from, you know, another junior who's in a job. It's a really, really cool and welcoming community, so I definitely suggest checking it out. Another one is Video Speed Controller. It's a Chrome extension. And so I don't know about anyone else, but for me, when I watch a video, I kind of like zone out in between words sometimes when someone's talking slowly. And so if you get that extension, you can speed up the video. So I usually speed it up to 2 times the normal speed. And just like, then I don't zone out. And so I process things a lot better when people are talking faster. So that's something that I recommend if you have the same problem. And then one last resource that I have is Open Source Society University. It's basically a free online bachelor's degree in computer science using free resources like edX or Coursera or MIT. And so they basically list all of the classes that they have, all the classes that you should take in a certain progression in order to learn all these computer science concepts. And so I'm going through that right now.
That's a good one.
It's really, really cool. I love it. And you can even like sign up with your name and information for accountability. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I definitely recommend checking that out as well.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So I've got 2 personal shout outs of my own. And you're going to appreciate this, Sharon, because they're both from 2 of the programs that you went to. And this was purely by accident. I was just looking for great blog posts on this topic. And the 2 that I found are from Skillcrush and from the Firehose Projects. So that worked out really well.
Yay.
So they're all career-related, junior web developer-related. So one is 12 Things You Must Do to Land a Junior Web Developer Job. And that one's by Skillcrush. And I really love listicles. I love listicles. I think it's efficient, it's fast, it gets the point, assuming that it's good content. And this is a really good one, and it just echoes a lot of the things that I've been telling people for a very long time, building your own portfolio site, doing actual projects, freelancing when you can, making sure your code is on GitHub, knowing how to use Git and use GitHub is big. Open source contribution, there's, you know, like 7 other really good ideas here. So definitely check it out if you are looking for a junior level position or you are going to in the next, you know, 6 months. Definitely gives you some things to think about and work on so you can be job ready.
They have so many good articles. It's hard to pick
they
one.
They do. They really do. Yeah, their content is on point for sure. The other one is called Getting Your First Junior Web Developer Job. And this one is from the Firehose Project. And this one I liked a lot. It's a little long for a blog post, but it's totally worth it. And it talks specifically about the interview process, which I think is one of the most intimidating parts of the process. I know when I interviewed people for the apprenticeship, at least half of them were visibly terrified. I don't know if I made it better or worse as I continued to talk, but it's intimidating. And this one talks about the technical interview and how it's very different from a lot of just regular interviews that you might have. It gives really good tips. It talks about how to shape up your resume. It also talks about the different levels of an interview process, which is new for a lot of people who aren't from the tech industry. So the fact that there's a phone screen that might happen, then there's the actual interview, then there's the one where you meet 12 people in 3 hours, which is just very tiring, if nothing else. And so it walks you through what to expect and how to get ready. So it's a really, really great junior web developer, or just a really great interview resource. So definitely check that out.
It's amazing how different interviews in tech are from normal jobs. I'm so used to just going into a room and handing them my resume and answering a few questions and that's it. Whereas technical jobs is just this huge process.
What's been the biggest difference for you?
I think the whiteboard challenges.
They're great, aren't they?
Yeah.
Welcome to coding.
Very, very different. Definitely not used to that.
I'm really happy that they are becoming more and more controversial. I think a lot of people have felt for a long time that they don't really make sense. You're never, you know, whiteboard coding on the job unless you're just brainstorming, right? You're never actually doing coding on a whiteboard at the job, so it doesn't make sense. And especially when the challenges aren't even about the type of coding you do at the job, they're about algorithms and math puzzles and things that you wouldn't think about. And I think people have known for a long time and felt for a long time that it didn't make sense. But I think more and more people are being very vocal about it. So I'm interested and excited to see how different people are evaluated for different jobs moving forward, specifically the junior positions and the entry-level positions. And what tools are we going to use to figure out if someone really knows what they're doing and can do the job?
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
Mm-hmm. So if you want to join the conversation, you can join us on Code Newbie Discourse, our online forum for people excited about code. Or you can chat with us every week on the Code Newbie Twitter chat. Just search for hashtag Code Newbie and tweet with us every Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You can learn more about that as well as show notes on this episode at codenewbie.org/podcast. And we'll also have information on how to reach Sharon if you're interested in getting to know her a little bit better. If there's a topic you want to hear about or a guest you want to hear from, send us an email, hello@codenewbie.org. Thank you again, Sharon, so much for joining us. You want to say goodbye?
Bye, everyone. Thanks for having me. It was such a pleasure.
Thanks for listening. See you next week.